The Lord be with you. A reading from the Holy Gospel according to John. There was a wedding at Cana in Galilee, and the mother of Jesus was there. Jesus and his disciples were also invited to the wedding. When the wine ran short, the mother of Jesus said to him, "They have no wine." And Jesus said to her, "Woman, how does your concern affect me? My hour has not yet come." His mother said to the servers, "Do whatever he tells you." Now there were 6 stone water jars there for Jewish ceremonial washings, each holding 20 to 30 gallons. Jesus told them, "Fill the jars with water." So they filled them to the brim. Then he told them, "Draw some out now and take it to the head waiter." So they took it. And when the head waiter tasted the water that had become wine, without knowing where it came from, although the servers who had drawn the water knew, the head waiter called the bridegroom and said to him, "Everyone serves good wine first, and then when people have drunk freely, an inferior one. But you have kept the good wine until now." Jesus did this as the beginning of his signs at Cana in Galilee, and so revealed his glory, and his disciples began to believe in him. The Gospel of the Lord. I'm going to try to find the page of that second reading. I wanted to read part of that. So, if you've ever been on one of our parish trips to the Holy Land, one of the things that we always do is we stop at Cana. There's a little church there, probably dates back, I don't know, probably somewhere late 1600s, early 1700s. For the people in the Holy Land, that's pretty modern. We stop at this little church, and all the people, all the married couples who are on the tour, we renew marriage vows in this church. It's a beautiful church. But just like always, there were people who said, "Well, you know, many of these things perhaps were just stories that had been developed because people wanted to develop a culture around this person, Jesus, and they wanted to talk about how he performed these miracles. This was the beginning of his public ministry, basically." And as in so many cases, once they start to dig underneath the church, they discover the church from the Middle Ages, they discover the church from the Crusader period, they discover the church from the Byzantine period that was built at the time of Constantine's mother, St. Helen. They begin to think, well, this might actually be the place where it actually happened. But then they kept digging a little deeper, and they found, and if you go there today down to the basement, a lot of people don't know you can go down to the basement, you'll find these stone jars that are literally 5 feet tall. They hold a lot more than 30 gallons. And there were probably 3 or 4 of these great big stone jars that were buried underneath the site where these ancient churches were built. So they found the jars. It's fascinating to me how Jesus at this particular wedding performs this miracle as his first miracle, because it would seem from the words of the steward that the congregation who was present for the celebration had already drunk freely, right? They had drunk freely, he says. Normally, you serve the good wine first. And yet Jesus produces 180 gallons of wine. Now, to put that into perspective, when we have a parish reception, we might use 6 bottles of that. Maybe we're just not like the big drinkers like they were back in the time of Jesus. So it was either a really huge crowd or they all spent the night. What a gift that was to the people of the time. Well, St. Paul talks about these gifts in the second reading, the gifts that the Holy Spirit gives to the church. And I've always been a little skeptical about these gifts because they've never happened for me. I've always wondered what's wrong with me because they don't happen. I haven't lately, but when I was in the seminary especially, I was really fascinated by the whole reality of healing masses and charismatic prayer gifts, the gifts of tongues and the interpretation of tongues and prophecy and healing, all these things that seem to be so clearly happening right in front of your eyes. And then I would go up to the front where the priest was laying hands on people and everybody else was kind of falling on the floor, and I just stood there. It was like nothing happened. So I always felt like maybe I wasn't called to have these kinds of gifts. But obviously, we know that God has more gifts in store than just the few that are listed in St. Paul's letter in the second reading today. And we know that the Holy Spirit comes with those gifts. So therefore, if you are baptized, you have received them. The Holy Spirit doesn't come in part. You can't just get a part of the Holy Spirit in baptism. You get the whole deal. So whatever gifts you might have received in baptism, you receive them fully. So this is something that is a matter of trust. Now, it is true that there are gifts that we receive in baptism, faith, hope, and charity, called the supernatural virtues. And there are more gifts that we receive from the Holy Spirit in the sacrament of confirmation. The seven gifts of the Holy Spirit: knowledge, understanding, wisdom, counsel, fortitude, piety, and fear of the Lord. These are the gifts that we receive for ourselves. They're for our own personal formation. But the gifts that St. Paul speaks about, he very clearly says these are intended for a purpose. And it's not me. That the gifts that we receive from the Holy Spirit are gifts that are given in service, as he says in the second line of the reading, in service, in the workings of the spiritual life. They're gifts that are intended for others. Imagine if Jesus had only performed these gifts for himself. Like, what if, for example, Mary had said, "Jesus, they have no more wine." And he just took a cup of water and turned it into wine and drank it himself. That wouldn't be any good, would it? It might have been a miracle, but it would not have been considered a gift that was intended for everyone. In the same way that you and I receive gifts, we don't waste them on ourselves. We have to use them in order to bring about a deeper life with God in the church. And the fact is that most of these gifts are not the big flashy ones. You might be surprised, actually, how simple these gifts can be and how simple they are intended to serve simple life. It doesn't mean you have to become like a rock star or go on tour for these gifts that you have. They're just simple, everyday, ordinary lives that make us like Christ for other people. In our parish, we had about 600 people, all in all, maybe a little over 600 people, who went to the workshop for Called and Gifted. We did it 4 times here in the parish. I don't think we'll probably do it again because the last time we did it, the response was not very good. But about 600 people in the parish have received this workshop. And so if you imagine that, that would be one whole church of people. If we have 10 masses, then it's better than 1/10 of the practicing population of St. Mary the Immaculate Conception. 600 people who have discovered that gifts go beyond those things that we don't feel that we are capable or worthy of receiving. And here's what some of them are. The gift of leadership. That's an interesting one. A gift that says that you are placed here by God to be a leader. Lots of people have this gift, but they never experiment with it. What about the gift of organization? When have you walked into some place in your life and have discovered chaos, and you go right to work, putting it back into order? You might call that type A personality, but I call it the gift of organization. Or the gift of art, or craftsmanship, or creativity. This is a big gift. This is what allows us to make our spaces beautiful, to enhance our worship. But not just in the church, by the way. These gifts are intended not just for the church. They're intended for everywhere we go in our daily lives. So this counts at home. This counts at work. You provide for your family a beautiful home. You do what's necessary to fix what's broken, things like that. That's a gift. Other gifts are giving. If you're a person who, by your nature, is giving or helping. Another gift is hospitality. That means you're a welcoming person, and people can sense that when they meet you. One of the most important gifts, I think, in the church is called intercessory prayer. And there are people who literally feel moved to pray for people all the time. This is a very special gift. It's something that I think maybe if we were listening closer, a lot of us would realize we had this gift. There's the gift of service, a gift of teaching, and particularly this year, one of the most important gifts that we need to grow in our awareness of is the gift of mercy. Because you and I need to be merciful people. Once again, I had two masses this week at nursing homes, and we usually do the next Sunday mass. So as I was talking about these readings with all of the people who came to these masses, and we have more and more all the time, most of them are in wheelchairs, I could see them looking at me saying, well, what am I going to do with all this? I said, well, you could have a gift of hospitality, encouragement, helping, giving. All of these gifts are simple gifts for simple lives. And even if you're bound to a wheelchair, it does not mean you can't still be a giving person and use these gifts that God has given you in order to bring about some kind of difference. The gospel today shows that the gift that comes in the unexpected way is sometimes the one that is most surprising. Why is it, I suppose, that Jesus would have provided a better wine than they had at the beginning of the wedding? Maybe the bride's parents were cheap and the wine wasn't very good. Who knows? Jesus had good taste because he was the Son of God, of course, and he knows a good glass of wine. But the fact is that these gifts need to be used. I wonder if Mary, his mother, had some kind of insight and said, you know what, this gift has a particular time that it needs to be manifest. And maybe sometimes, as in the case in our life and community, sometimes it requires another person to encourage you to put your gifts into motion so that you might be the one who brings about that difference in the life of the church. As a people, we need to be thankful for these gifts, many gifts that we've received, not gifts of service and all these things that I've been speaking about. But if you notice, on the walls of the church here, we have two large banners. Last week, all of the, it was the week before last, all the students at Holy Cross Academy and all the children in religious education made a list of the things that they're thankful for with their parents. And we tabulated those, and so the largest words are the ones that were the largest answers, the most popular answers. Notice, the biggest one of all is family, which I was kind of happy to see. Family is the greatest gift that we have. Let our families and let our parish family be the context that we allow these gifts to discover and to grow and to be fruitful in the life of the church.